One.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We are in the final hour of the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. Nick Redfern is the guest talking about the book, The NASA Conspiracies. We've been involved in listener questions and lots more. Chris, any more questions or follow-ups?
Well, we have a question that is more about Nick's work here. And basically, it's one of our longtime posters. And he says, how does it feel to be on a roll? Between this book and the last one, it seems like his work is generating some serious discussion and good vibes. It's a far cry from the reaction to Body Snatchers. Do you feel that these books may become more of a legacy than the cryptozoological books that you've written? And you've written quite a number of good ones. And do you feel that they're more important?
Well, I mean, I appreciate the comments, you know, that the person said. I mean, to be honest, I don't that often get into the deeper issue of what this book or that book's going to mean to people. I mean, I write about things, you know, I mean, I'm not that deep a person. You know, I write about the things I find interesting. And more importantly, because one thing I hate more than any other is when I pick a book up and it just goes over old ground.
Right.
Which is why I always try and, you know, even if I'm dealing with subjects that have been dealt with before, I always try and bring new information to the table. Like, for example, in this book, about the face of Mars, for example, you know, one of the people I interviewed was the late Matt Tonis, who gave me a lot of information, you know, about the whole, his theories on the face on Mars and what he felt it was and possibly still is and how it came into being, etc. And I think when you're looking at things like that, then if you can bring new information to the table, that's the most important thing, and that's what I try to do. Now, when you're looking at things like, you know, do I feel this book's going to be more readily accepted than Body Snatchers, I don't worry about that. You know, I put Body Snatchers out because this is the story I was told, and it presents a new spin on Roswell, and I felt it was an important story that people should be told about. You know, I mean, I think in terms of people who look at things conventionally, if you can call it conventionally, you know, that aliens are visiting the Earth and the government's hiding the information, yes, this book will probably be more popular. But do I feel that that's the most important issue why I write this book or that book? No, you know, I put out information that I hope will kind of add to what we know or what we think we know, you know, about the various phenomena we're investigating. You know, I wouldn't want people to have sort of a cynical approach of, oh, this is going to sell more than that because it's saying what people want to hear. No, I would never do that. I'd rather walk away from the subject than do that.
There's probably also, I should be fair to add this, that I don't think there's enough money in any UFO or space conspiracy book to make it make sense to just grab it for a project. Nick can make a lot more money from doing mainstream stuff.
No, that's actually a very good point. You know, sort of alluded to before, you know, I'm certainly not driving around in a, you know, a Corvette. I'm actually driving around in a 7-year-old Ford Taurus, which is actually, I won't say it's seen better days, but it's, you know, it's a 7-year-old Ford Taurus. You know, I think it's one of these situations where you're quite right that it doesn't matter what people, you know, to take the cynical approach. If you're writing books about UFOs, you're probably going to sell X thousand of copies, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 copies, who knows what. But, you know, my approach has always been whatever I write about, I want to try and bring something new. And often, you know, that bringing something new doesn't always bring what people want to hear. You know, if I wanted to sell 50,000 copies of a book, I would never have written Body Snatchers, which, you know, tells a story of a very alternative down-to-earth theory, although a dark theory for Roswell. If I wanted to, you know, sort of have a good position within the UFO community, I wouldn't have written that. But I don't care about having a good position in the UFO community. I care about telling a story that potentially I feel is important, you know. If I worry about what people thought about me and whether I was saying the right thing, I'd never do anything. You know, I do what I feel is important to do, and
Yeah, you wouldn't write a book about the trickster.
Well, I would, but the trickster, you know, it's, I mean, joking aside, people like yourself, you know, have done so much good research. It's like, why would I go blundering into that? But if I found, you know, sort of a new angle on the Kecksburg story that nobody had mentioned before, then I would think, wow, you know, I'll do a book on this. But, you know, it's like, why go blundering into certain areas that I, you know, there are other people such as yourself, like the trickster angle, know far more about. I would sooner, you know, go with areas I feel comfortable writing about, but where I can add something new to it. And, you know, the whole, like, you know, you just pointed out, the whole idea of selling books is really irrelevant when the market for UFO books is so fairly small anyway. You know, it's not a relevant issue to me.
Okay, one of the areas that you do talk about that has been covered somewhat, I think, over the years in various books, not as in-depth, I think, as it deserves, but one of the things that's always intrigued me, and I'm sure others out there in the listening audience, is some of these really amazing, you know, like the STS-80 footage, some of these object sightings that have been reported over the years by astronauts. You know, Santa Claus is real. What was the famous quote from the Apollo astronauts? You have a very intriguing chapter that talks about Gordon Cooper and Jim McDivitt, and some of the astronaut sightings. Do you want to just kind of briefly go over some of those?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, this is one of the most important issues. You know, when you talk about talk about conspiracy theories, cover-ups, and government documents, but when you actually get NASA astronauts talking on the record about, you know, their own personal experiences of UFOs or knowledge of UFOs, then that sort of takes things to a whole different level. I mean, one of them, you know, one of the most important characters was Gordon Cooper, one of the original Gemini astronauts. Now, you know, he was someone who, you know, was very vocal, even to the United Nations, by presenting statements to the United Nations that, yes, UFOs were real. And one of the reasons he believed this was because, rather ironically, before he became a NASA astronaut in the early 50s, when he was with the U.S. military and taking part in missions over Europe, you know, to sort of see what the Russians were doing, he had a UFO experience of his own, seeing these saucer-like objects flying high in the sky that the military actually said were seed pods. You know, which is, you know, like the most bizarre.
That one always blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, ironically, all that sounds like something about the invasion of the body snatchers, you know, like pods in the sky or whatever. But I don't think that was what the military were trying to, you know, instill, but it was just trying to find out or trying to present a down-to-earth theory. But it was because of this and then other experiences where, you know, he'd seen film footage of UFOs out at Edwards Air Force Base landing and taking off that inspired Cooper to, you know, really get behind the idea that there was a genuine UFO phenomenon. And also, Edgar Mitchell, who, you know, commanded one of the Apollo moon missions that landed on the moon in 71, you know, Mitchell has actually gone on record as stating that not only does he believe UFOs are real, but he was actually got information from inside the sources very recently that, yes, Roswell was real and he involved aliens. Now, you know, if this was something, anything to do with other than UFOs, the mainstream media would be, you know, doing all it could to get to the bottom of this story. But it's almost as if when it comes to UFOs, even if it's coming from like a NASA astronaut, that it's like, and finally, you know, to lighten the day, here's what astronaut so-and-so has to say about aliens. It's like,
you know, maybe the thing is also, Nick, is that, okay, these guys are getting on in years. And you say, ah, well, you know, he was an astronaut 40 years ago. He's getting on in years. He's a little bit light in the head. So he believes in UFOs. Ha, ha, ho, ho. That's an excuse. Obviously, not an excuse we'd want to regard as valid, but maybe we can see why that's happening. The book is called The NASA Conspiracies. The author is called Nick Redfern, and we can go into why in a long time passing, but that's another story. We also have Chris O'Brien, co-host. You can write us, news@theparacast.com, news@theparacast.com. I'm Gene Steinberg, and why I was called Gene Steinberg is another story that also is not germane to this situation. You're in
the Paracast.
Jacques Vallée, Bud Hopkins, Brad Steiger, Nick Redfern, Lauren Coleman. You'll find classic and new books by these and many other authors at Anomalous Books, the number one publisher of 14 books on the planet. They specialize in books on UFOs and aliens, Bigfoot and cryptozoology, parapsychology and the paranormal, as well as alternative history, all of which makes Anomalous Books simply phenomenal. Check out their catalog at anomalousbooks.com. That's AnomalousBooks.com. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
When making important financial decisions, you should always know the facts. That's why Midas Resources is willing to pay you to read the facts. Midas Resources, a team of hand-picked financial specialists with decades of financial experience who are ready to provide you with state-of-the-art, up-to-date financial services. Midas Resources offers a host of services and stands behind their products. In fact, if you call and order their free Midas report, Midas Resources will pay you. This detailed report will provide you with financial history on the safest and most profitable areas to invest in. If you read the report, Midas Resources will send you a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar. So what are you waiting for? Get the facts and call Midas Resources toll free at 888-292-2709. That's 888-292-2709. And remember, if you read the Midas report, you'll receive a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 5 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $209, and the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping. An $87 value, yours free. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
I'm concerned about food for my family in the event of an emergency, and I know you are too. Are you ready? Don't wait for an emergency to happen. Put a plan together now with quality dehydrated food from Ready Reserve Foods. For nearly 40 years, Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, canning the finest in dehydrated foods. Other companies just broker canned foods. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer, controlling quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packing for maximum shelf life. Ready Reserve offers a balanced selection of fruits, vegetables, dairy products, proteins, and grains. Choose from a variety of pre-selected units or order by individual can to customize your own plan. When you purchase from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Call today for a free catalog, 1-800-453-2202, or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Call 1-800-453-2202. Ready Reserve Foods. Factory direct, wholesale pricing.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
We have Nick Redfern joining us on the Paracast to talk about the NASA conspiracies, his latest book. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. And we've been looking at, obviously, the situation involving NASA people, astronauts all saying there's something to the UFO mystery. But the question, I guess, is always raised here, is it because they simply look at the evidence and believe in UFOs, or in one case here, maybe they have access to something, or are they trying to tell us something a lot more?
Well, you know, I mean, it's one of these things where you can always look at it two ways. I mean, for example, I point out in the final chapter of the book, when you come to the issue of are they trying to tell us something more, you know, I point out this relationship that's sort of developing and growing between NASA and the Vatican. Now, a lot of people don't realize, and a lot of people do, that the Vatican has a very deep interest in astronomy, outer space, and non-human life.
They have an observatory just up the road from me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Vatican has been very vocal about the idea that it's okay for the, you know, the Catholic Church and its followers to believe in aliens, and it doesn't take away from their belief systems or, you know, long-term beliefs, etc. And the fact that, you know, this is in tandem with NASA has led a lot of people, quite legitimately, to wonder if this is part of some sort of slow drip feed process to acclimatize us to the idea that not only is it okay to believe in aliens in a theoretical sense, but also that they really do exist and they are actually coming here. So, you know, I think we can look at it from the idea that, yes, aliens are here and they're visiting, and there's this indoctrination process in some terms, which kind of sounds like a sinister term, and it may well be. Or, you know, maybe they're just, they realize there's a phenomenon, but they don't have all the answers. I think it could be somewhere between the two. I think there's often a tendency to think if governments investigate UFOs and they hide information, that's because they have all the answers. It may be they don't have all the answers, but rather they know something's going on, but they're not entirely sure how to deal with it, what it means, or what the implications and the agenda are behind the whole UFO phenomenon. And I think those are all important issues that we should bear in mind. And
also the matter of fact here, Nick, it would cause panic, wouldn't it, on the part of some people, if governments say, hey, we don't know what's in our skies.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing. If a government was to simply say, okay, back in the 40s and 50s, we were visited, and these things, they did abduct a few people, and it was kind of sinister, and we didn't want to tell you back then, but they've either gone away, or they're not doing this anymore, there might be a, you know, that would be cause concern, but it wouldn't be overwhelming concern, I don't think. But a statement to the effect that something's interacting with us, but number one, we don't know what it is, number two, we don't know where it's from, and number three, we don't really know what it's doing here, whether it's friendly or hostile or somewhere in between or ambivalent or whatever, and we're not able to stop it from happening, I think that issue would be of concern. And it's kind of like, you know, it's like in England, we have this phrase that, you know, you can't be a little bit pregnant. It's kind of like, with respect to UFOs, you cannot tell part of the story. If Obama or whoever, God forbid Sarah Palin, had to say that UFOs existed, well, you know, it's like, that won't be enough. That it will not satisfy anyone enough to say that UFOs exist. Questions will be asked, well, what about abductions? What about cattle mutilations? What about this? What about that? And the floodgates will be opened. And I think that's the big concern. I actually don't think it's so much the concern, it's the fact that alien may exist that is the overriding reason for the secrecy. It's the knock-on effect and the additional questions that will inevitably be provoked by such a revelation that concerns the government and NASA.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Just kind of going back to the Vatican involvement in space and interest in space, perhaps part of the slow drip process is naming the Pope Benedict and putting in a guy that looks like an alien. He's one of the most demonic-looking people I've ever seen a photograph of. And I guess if people don't recoil to him, perhaps there's hope for some sort of disclosure at some point. I couldn't resist.
No, I mean, I understand what you say. I think the important thing to remember as well is that, you know, if the Vatican's saying something, either the Vatican knows, well, that's going to be intriguing itself, but what if the Vatican is only going on what it's been told by NASA and other agencies, and the Vatican is deceived as much as we are? You know, I mean, I point out in the book, I have chapters in the book that look at issues that concern UFOs and the theory as to what lies behind the UFO phenomenon, but they have nothing to do with aliens. You know, there's, as you probably remember, there's one chapter in the book that sort of focus is very much in similar pathways to those covered by Matt Tonis in his Crypto-Terrestrials book. I have a chapter in there about a NASA contractor guy who had a classic contactee experience in 1973. He had this encounter with like a long-haired alien out in the desert and was briefed by NASA and was told, you know, these aren't aliens. They're a deceptive ancient human race and we should not trust them and keep yourself as far away from them as possible. You know, it's like if the Vatican comes out with something, can we even trust it? Not because we may not be able to trust the Vatican, but we may not be able to trust what the Vatican was told itself.
Hey, Chris, any more questions left?
The chapter in there on the involvement of NASA and the abduction phenomenon is I think has some really interesting, raises some interesting questions. Do you want to address that a little bit? You mentioned the contactee being contacted by NASA about his experience. How about the abduction phenomenon?
This is another one that's sort of a little known area. You know, it's, again, as I mentioned earlier, that we know that NASA obviously keeps a close track on what's going on in outer space. But the idea that it's actually watching also what's going on the Earth with respect, you know, literally on the Earth itself with respect to UFOs is sort of a surprising issue. Now, I interviewed a woman from the book named Sharon who actually still works in a secretarial position at NASA's Kennedy Space Center to this day, and that is her, for people who are wondering, that is her first real name. So it might not actually be that difficult for NASA to know. There probably aren't that many Sharons working at the NASA Kennedy Space Center. But she told me how she'd had these sort of classic alien abduction experiences, you know, the typical thing of being taken to craft, examined, probed, etc., then, you know, returned to her bedroom and so forth. But over time, particularly when she was living with her boyfriend, who was present when some of these experiences occurred, he said, you know, she never actually left bedroom. It was almost like it was an internal, subjective experience in her mind. She happened to mention this to people at work at NASA and was then approached by a woman who worked for the agency and said, you know, can I speak to you about your experiences? And, you know, as I stress in the book, it wasn't like a Man in Black type experience where she was threatened and intimidated into silence. It was along the lines of, well, you know, we've heard about your story, very interesting. There are people in NASA that are intrigued by all this and concerned by it, and we'd just like to get your story on record. You know, it will add to the body of data we have. And the story that she was given by NASA was very, very kind of unsettling and actually sort of focuses on some of the stuff in my final events book, that these entities weren't extraterrestrial. They were like deceptive, occult-based creatures that were, I guess, almost like feeding on the human life force, if you like, and that NASA was deeply concerned about this and was trying to get as much information on record as it could, and that they thanked her afterwards and said, well, don't say too much about it, but, you know, we appreciate you telling us.
I appreciate your telling us all this, Nick, because we have to take another break. Nick Redfern's the guest. The book is called The NASA Conspiracies. Chris O'Brien's our co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Paracast.
The Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Fortean phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@WebTV.net. That's MrUFO@WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Attention, an important product from hempusa.org, microplant powder, will change your life by removing all types of positive toxins, such as heavy metals, parasites, bacteria, viruses, and fungus from the digestive tract and stomach wall so you can absorb nutrients. Microplant powder is 89% silica and packed with a negative charge that attracts positive toxins from the blood, organs, spine, and brain. This product has the ability to rebuild cartilage and bone, which allows synovial fluid to return to the
the joints. Silica is a precursor to calcium, meaning the body turns silica into calcium and is great for the heart. There is no better time than now to have microplant powder on your shelf or in your storage shelter. And with an unlimited shelf life, you can store it anywhere. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. It's a great way to change your life. So call 908-691-2608 or visit us at hempusa.org today.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hello. At OfTheField.com, we strive to empower you with wild food preparedness. We get lots of amazing positive feedback, most of which we feature on OfTheField.com. Here's a small sample of all that people like you have to say about the wild food experience.
It's inspiring for many who are affected by the recent downturn of the economy.
I already knew a bit about foraging and edibles, but you take it to a whole new level.
A thousand thanks to you for all that great knowledge. It was empowering.
When I was in the Navy, I went through a couple of quick land survival classes.
Thank you for being an inspiration and for all the work that you do.
I really appreciate the depth and detail of the information.
Thank you so much.
Much love and respect to you from all of us here in the boonies.
Thanks again.
Knowledge is power, and that power brings peace.
Folks, thanks for letting us help you get back to basics. Read all of the testimonials at ofthefield.com. You can order online for you and your loved ones or call 1-888-51-EAT-FREE to share in the secret.
On air, online, and on demand, we are the GCN Radio Network.
This is the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
We have Nick Redfern, author of The NASA Conspiracies, Chris O'Brien, the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast, and so the beings seem demonic. You have more to say on that before we get to the next question?
Well, you know, I mean, my view on this whole thing, like, you know, when we did the interview with Final Events, is that I think whether they're extraterrestrial, interdimensional, crypto-terrestrial, demonic, time travelers, whatever, what this tells us is that there's a genuine UFO phenomenon, but nobody really has a good handle on what lies at the heart of it beyond the fact that the phenomenon exists. And I think that's a critical issue to remember, is that, you know, as I said, we think government agencies have all the answers and they're hiding the truth. I think they're hiding significant facts about the existence of a genuine UFO presence, but they may have no real idea of the specific origin of the phenomenon than we do. They may be grasping at straws, and NASA's, or the view of certain people in NASA that it's an ancient terrestrial race like Mac Tonis talked about, or that it's demonic, just typifies the fact that everybody's thinking, what on earth's going on? You know, who are they?
Now, so maybe if we ignore it, they'll go away.
Well, we can hope, but I somehow have doubts about that.
Okay, Gene, I kind of finished up my list of questions and the ones on the forum. Where do you want to take it?
I'm going to take it to the face on Mars.
There you go.
The objects, the artifacts. And, of course, one of the guests we've never had on the show, and I'm not going to say whether he won't be on in the future. He hasn't been on yet. That was, of course, our friend Mr. Hoagland. Now, the first time we had Mac Tonis on the show, we weren't talking about crypto-terrestrials. We were talking about the mysteries on Mars. You do touch into some of these things like the face on Mars. Any providence to that in your research, Nick?
Well, you know, I mean, the biggest problem we have with the face on Mars in terms of evaluating it is the fact that it's on Mars, you know, which is millions of miles away. That's the biggest problem. We cannot go there, or at least most of us can't, even if clandestinely, who knows, maybe somebody has. But if they haven't, then all we're forced to work with is photographic evidence and personal interpretations, theories, and ideas. And there's absolutely no doubt that the face on Mars looks intriguing. Now, NASA doesn't ignore the issue. If you ask NASA, they will quite openly answer questions. But their view is that it's kind of like people seeing faces in clouds. That's their view. You know, it's the idea that, well, people know what faces look like. So if you see one in a cloud and it looks like a face, they say, well, that looks like a face. And that's what they say with the face on Mars, that people are just, you know, putting random imagery together in a fashion where it's something that they can recognize. But when you look at the bigger picture and you see that very near in the region of Cydonia, where the face on Mars can be found, you see what eerily look like ruined pyramid-type structures. And the face on Mars looks very Sphinx-like, whereas the Sphinx in Egypt points outwards. You know, the face on Mars points upwards, however. But, you know, I think Mac Tony, so I interviewed extensively for the book on this particular chapter, made an extremely good case for the fact that the face is artificial, very, very ancient, probably built by, you know, some indigenous Martian species long obviously before Mars's atmosphere decayed and finally, you know, was just destroyed. You know,
so basically these are the deserts of Barsoom, as they said in the old Edgar Rice Burroughs stories.
Yeah, exactly. And Mac did hypothesize on the idea that perhaps, you know, when the Martian atmosphere began to fragment and disintegrate, that possibly the last fragments of this society could have made their way here. You know, maybe ironically, all our stories about gods coming to the Earth could be the last vestiges of some survival mission from Mars to here, and that ironically, we are actually the Martians, you know.
That's what I keep trying to tell people. They say, well, you believe in aliens. I say, yeah, I believe in aliens. We're the aliens.
Sure. Men are from Venus, women are from Mars, or is it the reverse? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
We were probably seeded here. Who knows?
Yeah,
okay, I mean, all right. So we have the face on Mars, that possibility. What about things going on perhaps on the moon? Strange things.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the more interesting stories was a former Air Force guy named Carl Wolf, who worked on a NASA program, or was sort of contracted, if you like, in the mid-60s, and said that he spoke with an airman at one particular NASA contractor installation where supposedly NASA had photographed on the far side of the moon what looked like, you know, almost like a base, like a city on the far side of the moon, which is, you know, incredibly controversial. But Carl Wolf has stood by his story. You know, he has a very credible background, said, you know, I spoke with this guy, and he was sort of highly concerned about the fact that these structures have been photographed on the far side of the moon, which seemed to imply some sort of, as I said, a base or a city that clearly wasn't ours or the Russians back in the mid-1960s. And there have been things like obelisks, you know, having been photographed on the moon that look very, very weird and that don't seem to be natural rock formations. And again, things like this, it's when you see these odd formations, it's incredibly difficult to just write them off as anomalies of nature. They, you know, when we see so many of them, and it leads me to believe that, you know, there's far more going on in outer space and in our immediate, you know, near Earth space as well, the moon, Mars, wherever, that we just simply haven't begun to appreciate, or at least the general public and the media hasn't. Whether or not somebody in the intelligence community and NASA has, that's an entirely different question, which I think is a valid question as well.
Would it be a reason for NASA not to want to go back to the moon?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the theories that's been put forward is that we were warned off, you know, and that's been mentioned in a number of books, but it's such a vague statement that you have to wonder how or why would we have been warned off. I think my personal view is that either we didn't go back and there was a catastrophic public relations blunder where NASA really should have capitalized with not just the public but the media and Congress to say, you know, really fund us well and we'll do fantastic things. It was either a catastrophic blunder where they didn't do that, or there has really been some sort of secret in tandem space program running alongside the mainstream one that really has achieved fantastic results that we just don't know about. Or maybe it's a bit of the two. Maybe there was a huge blunder in public relations and it just NASA didn't capitalize on the moon landings, but at the same time, somebody else in conjunction with NASA and working with them, you know, really has developed technologies to go further than we really realize.
So why spend billions of dollars on technology that is basically ancient? Why deal with ancient technology if there's new stuff out there to deal with?
Well, I think part of the reason could be that the people are working on what some of us might term ancient technologies may actually not know the other ones have this highly advanced technology. You know, the whole issue of compound martialization, you know, the idea that agency A doesn't know what agency B is doing. You know, the notion that just because somebody is still working with rocket-based technology and fossil fuels, they may not be doing that as a cover. They may legitimately not realize that somebody else is working with truly groundbreaking technologies that make, you know, their technology look like somebody whacking a rock against a stone to try and get a bit of fire going, you know, in a caveman type scenario. I don't think necessarily NASA's current space, it is a secret space program. I don't necessarily think the current space program, the visible one, is a cover story. It may be the people that are working on the space shuttle programs, etc., just don't know that there's this far more advanced program in existence.
Wouldn't they suspect? I mean, how do you keep that secret? I mean, you have to have private industry building the spaceships, and that's a big question, and maybe we have to explore that. How do you take a secret space program? I don't mean, you know, flying spy satellites and stuff like that. We know that's going on. I mean more advanced exploration with more advanced aircraft stuff that will really make your socks fly off, you know? We have Nick Redfern. He's author of The NASA Conspiracies, where we explore the good, bad, and ugly of the various conspiracies. By the way, neighbors, check out our forums, forum.theparacast.com, forum.theparacast.com, where when we have advance warning, you can ask our questions. You can ask questions of our forthcoming guests. We have Chris O'Brien as the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in. Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com. Or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Did you know that you can be tracked and traced when you're online? With identity theft and cybercrimes on the rise, your passwords, your identity, and even your physical location can be revealed to complete strangers. Would you like to surf the internet anonymously and not have to worry about these threats? Well, now you can by visiting patriotinternet.com. For about $2 per month, patriotinternet.com will conceal your IP address and your physical location, allowing you to browse the web, send emails, and instant message anonymously. PatriotInternet.com will bypass filters, blocked sites, and keyword blocking. You can also bypass logging by your router and your ISP. With PatriotInternet.com, there is no software to install and uses 128-bit encryption for your protection. When using wireless hotspots, PatriotInternet.com shields your information from identity thieves and is compatible with Windows, Mac, and Linux. Protect your identity and your freedom with anonymous internet access from PatriotInternet.com. Visit PatriotInternet.com today.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
Nick Redfern, speaking fast, Paracast.
Fast.
Okay.
Fast.
Right.
Okay.
There used to be a guy on TV, okay, by the way. I think he did commercials for Federal Express,
yep,
and he had to talk very fast. I think he later became a politician, but that's another story and probably not true. Chris O'Brien is a co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. We're in the Paracast. So I guess we're talking about here the possibility of a top secret space program.
Yes.
And about keeping all this a secret from even the public, NASA.
Yeah, I think the important thing to remember when it comes to whether or not NASA or any agency could hide all this from the general public is that if you go back to, for example, the moon landings in 69 to 72, you know, you had this huge Apollo spacecraft, which was, you know, the rocket was like the size of a skyscraper, and yet the actual craft that landed on the moon was just a very tip, you know, this tiny capsule with three astronauts crammed into it like sardines in a can, and the lunar module, you know, the whole couple of hundred feet of the rest of it was just fuel. Well, if today we've developed something that doesn't require this huge rocket for fuel, you could actually have something that's like the size of the moon lander, which is like 20 feet. And if that is the case, potentially we could be flying things to the moon or Mars 20, 30 feet in size that nobody would ever see taking off. You know, that's the whole thing with the Apollo mission. You couldn't hide them because the craft was such a huge, humongous thing. You know, and I think that's the important thing. We could be flying stuff from Area 51, a 50-foot diameter craft, hypothetically, using some highly advanced propulsion system that would be, you know, necessarily wouldn't need to have lights on it, wouldn't need to be illuminated. It would take off at night. No one would see it taking off, and it would just, you know, leave the atmosphere and head to point A, B, or C. And so it would be very easy to hide the fact. You know, it's like no one could hide a space shuttle liftoff because it's such a huge, unwieldy, gigantic machine. Not just the shuttle, but the fuel tank and the boosters and everything else. And the launch tower that it's attached to. But if you've got something that's the size of like a Greyhound bus that could travel to Mars, who's going to see it? You know, it actually wouldn't, ironically, be that difficult to hide.
All right, so maybe there could be a secret space program here.
I think that's a genuinely interesting, intriguing scenario. I wouldn't fall down in a dead faint if it was one day proven to be real.
But, you know, with all these mysteries, how the heck do you prove any of it?
Well, that's the big question. I mean, you know, it's like any aspect of the whole UFO phenomenon. It's clear from government records, witness testimony, military people coming forward now they're in their 60s, 70s or 80s, that clearly something's going on. What we don't have, unfortunately, and I'll be the first to admit it doesn't help my own case, but I will be honest enough to admit we don't have that definitive smoking gun that will prove this or that is going on. And that's what we're striving to find. Now, whether there is a smoking gun or even just the government suspects that certain things are going on, I'm not sure. But clearly something is. You know, the big question is how we access that so-called black box where the material might be hidden. You know, the ironic thing is that the one person who may have come closer than anybody else in recent years is Gary McKinnon. And as a result of his sort of penetration of trying to find the truth, he now faces extradition to the US and 70 years in jail. You know, that's the harsh reality of what happens when you try and access the black box that we cannot access publicly and legitimately.
So basically, if you find out the truth, they'll come after you. What's happening with Gary McKinnon, by the way? They're still trying to extradite him, right?
Yeah, the US is still trying to extradite him because, you know, of the whole, not so much because of the UFO angle. I mean, they don't talk about that so much. It's more along the lines of, you know, he penetrated our computer systems. He, according to, you know, the military and NASA, he actually adversely affected the computer systems to where some of them were rendered inoperable or at least, you know, unusable for a while. And the very fact of hacking, and also he left a number of statements relative to, you know, things like conspiracy theories concerning 9/11 and the war on terror that they came after him. I think with McKinnon, you know, it's like, on the one hand, it would be ridiculous for somebody to think they could hack into the government's, you know, classified systems of any government and get away with it. And, of course, he didn't. But what I also think is that I actually don't believe that McKinnon's sentence, if he is sentenced, will reflect the nature of his crime. I think what will happen is that it's entirely possible he could have the entire book thrown at him and given the worst possible treatment as a means to say to everybody else, you know, you try something similar, you're going to get the same as McKinnon. So in other words, McKinnon's sentence may not reflect his crime. It may actually reflect a way of warning everybody else, you do this, you're going to get 70 years or whatever. But equally, you know, if McKinnon is brought to the US and to stand trial, it's entirely possible that an entire can of worms could be opened up, because by McKinnon's own admission, a lot of people forget this, the only reason he hacked, what he actually did, he hacked the Johnson Space Center at Houston, and he actually hacked one particular building. And the reason he did this was because a woman named Donna Hare, who worked for a NASA contractor, said she had seen in this particular building in the Johnson Space Center evidence where somebody within NASA was literally like airbrushing photographs, NASA photographs, before public release to airbrush out anomalies like UFOs. When McKinnon heard from Donna Hare's testimony that it was this particular branch of the agency in Houston, it was this particular building, he decided to hack that particular building. And I actually think there's a very good argument where if McKinnon is brought to the US, his lawyers could legitimately say, well, he only went looking because a NASA contractor actually spilled the beans on where to go looking. You know, it's like, where does the buck stop? Does it stop with NASA? Does it stop with a NASA whistleblower, Donna Hare, for saying this is where I saw evidence of airbrushing of NASA pictures? Or does it stop with McKinnon for following up on what somebody, you know, a government contractor, subcontractor, said was going on? You know, it could open a thorny can of worms of a very intricate legal nature.
Well, I don't know that it's going to get resolved anytime soon. Is there any new word on what the extradition hearing is all about, where it stands?
Yeah. Well, right now, it's still the case of where McKinnon's lawyers are saying, you know, because he has Asperger's syndrome, psychological condition, that he shouldn't be standing trial anyway. It's not his fault that he went hacking. It's a, you know, a side effect of his condition. And the US is saying, no, you know, this guy's going to is going to come to trial and we're going to prosecute the law. Now, you know, the one thing I would say is what everybody does admit is that McKinnon's entire actions were undertaken from within the British Isles, from within, you know, a British computer system, a British internet server, and yes, he hacked NASA. But, you know, it's like, it's basically a case of, well, McKinnon hacked NASA, so the Americans are going to say, we're bringing him here, like it or not. You know, let's say, for example, somebody in the U.S. today hacked a Chinese missile system, you know, on the Chinese military, and the Chinese said, well, we're going to bring this person to China for trial. There'll be outrage. Do you know what I mean? And it's the same thing. Everybody seems to agree, in Britain at least, that McKinnon, if he goes to trial, should stand trial in England. His crime was committed in England. Everything he did was in England. You know, it's should he not stand trial in England?
So basically the question of jurisdiction here has it that if he basically did this through British computers, it happens there. He can't come here. But I guess this is something that could be dragging on for years, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's gone on now for several years. I mean, it's gone right to the equivalent of, you know, the Prime Minister, you know, the equivalent of the U.S. President of, you know, along the lines of his lawyer saying, well, he has this Asperger's syndrome, you know, it's not his fault, and then putting back the extradition even further and getting statements from doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists saying, you know, this man is not fit to stand trial because he's not, you know, of a regular mindset.
I'm hoping they'll just give it up after 10 years of this.
I actually think that could be the case. And I think one of the prime reasons that might happen could be because of the can of worms that could be opened if McKinnon not only goes to trial, but, you know, takes the stand.
I'll tell you what, this is something that might even be worth a full show. Neighbors, you can find more of Nick's stuff at nickredfern.com. And, of course, with Chris O'Brien, you'll check out OurStrangePlanet.com, because it is a strange planet. The book is called The NASA Conspiracies. The author is Nick Redfern. Chris O'Brien was my co-host. This is the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg. A special, special thank you for our friend, Nick Redfern, for joining us on this week's show.
Well, thanks. Yep,
thanks, Nick. Hey, great show, man.
Thank you. Cool. Thanks a lot.
Paracast is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24/7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.